Hi! I'm so glad to see all of you this afternoon. You could have all been taking a nap or laying on the beach, and you chose to be here, and so thanks. It's really nice to see all of you. I'm going to give it just a couple more minutes, and then we'll get started. I will ask this. Will you please make sure that your cell phone is on silence? I know, me too. I've been the one who it's rung in the middle, and so let's just deal with it now, and then none of us will be as embarrassed later. And if yours still accidentally goes off, we still love you. We will not shoot daggers at you with our eyes. We all have made this promise together, okay? Thanks.
You got us all quiet.
I know, everyone's like, that's okay though, because there's not many moments that we're quiet when we're all around at Pepperdine. So quiet's good. We can do quiet for a minute. Oh, do you want me to keep talking so you can keep eating? Okay, I can cover awkward for you. I'm good with that. I love you enough to do that, my friend. Janice said that. Whoever's listening to this recording later, that was not me.
Just trying to help
her over. That's so good of you. That's what friends are for. That is what friends are for. Well, really, thank you for making the time to be here. My name is Risa Higgins. I'm the founding director of a ministry called 1128 Ministries. And we exist to take care of the spiritual lives of those who are invested in the kingdom of God. Some of those are paid vocational ministers. Some of them are their spouses. Some are volunteer leaders as ministry leaders, as deacons, as elders, and their spouses. Because in every one of those roles, whether they're paid or unpaid, acknowledged or unacknowledged, there is a price to be paid for being in spiritual leadership. And our desire is to provide some support to you. We at 1128 understand what it's like to show up in a space on a Sunday morning and be the one who's supposed to be good. It's your job to say, "How are you this morning?" And when they answer back, "Oh, I'm fine. How about you?" Up comes your Sunday morning. "I'm fine. Thank you for asking," so that you can be present to them. We know. And we know that it's not actually always true. I spend the majority of my days meeting one-on-one with ministers and leaders from all over the world. And I am honored to hear them be honest enough to say out loud, "Sometimes I wonder, what are we doing around here? What is this mess? Is God going to show up? What have we gotten ourselves into?" There's nowhere else they can say that. And I'm honored to hold that space with them. It's a gift and a privilege. So, thank you for coming in today and acknowledging together whatever place that you're in, you desire to meet God in this place. But sometimes we just need some different tools. So, in what I am confident has been a wonderful and good experience, I'm also confident you've heard a lot in the last several days. So I'm going to ask you to do something that may feel slightly uncomfortable. Let me promise you two things. One, I am not videoing. And two, I am not in any way hypnotizing you. I am just allowing you to relax a little bit. And everyone's doing it with you and no one's watching. Okay? So, if you would, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Take a deep breath. Slowly release. This time, as you inhale, place your hand on your belly and inhale until it is so full it won't move any farther. And then slowly release. With your next inhale, Imagine that you can bring into your very body the Spirit of the living God. Feel the breath of God move from your nose to your lungs. To your heart. Down into your toes. Out into your fingertips. Up into your mind. With every single breath, you fill your body with the living presence of the Spirit of God. And so use every exhale to gently release other thoughts and distractions that come to you. God, in this space, we pause. We notice. And we welcome your presence with us. Thank you for meeting us here. Amen. Thank you for being willing. I know it's different, and I appreciate it. So, what's with this weird title? So, I'm just going to confess right off the bat. Here's the deal. I love to come to the beach, and anytime Mike will say, hey, do you want to come to Pepperdine? My answer is yes, because there's a beach. I'm here. Whatever you want me to do, I'm going to do it. And he said, what I really want you to do is I want you to come, and I want you to talk to us about how in the world do you continue to be a person of faith, committed to this life, many of us in leadership, when it all shifts around us all the time? I said, oh, I'd love to come talk about that when we have the beach right outside as a perfect example. So I'm going to ask you to use your imagination for just a minute, because yesterday my husband and I went and walked the beach and we saw some whales, and it was about the best experience ever. Just about. It was amazing. So this is what I ask you to do. I want you to remember the last time you walked on the beach. Can you feel the sand between your toes? You know that spot right at the edge where the water's not going to get you wet yet, but the sand is still damp, and your feet start to sink down into the sand the longer you stand there. And you can feel the ocean pulling you in, even though you're not wet yet. For me, that is the perfect image of what it's like for me to be with God. God is pulling me in a little bit deeper all the time. And that sand is going to move under my feet, and I can either jump in and trust the water, or I can stand right there and watch and feel as the sand shifts. But either way, tide's going to come up, or I'm going to slip in. But that water's coming. And that water is not dangerous. It is warm and soft. And it's inviting and begging. And that is the image of God that has served as the foundation of my spiritual life for probably the last 10 years. So whatever season, we begin to walk ourselves in and we stop to think, where am I and how did I get here? We have to know what's the foundation. In my work in spiritual direction, we do a lot of work with images, and we wonder about what is an image that works for you. I'm here to tell you that Scripture is full of some incredibly vivid images of what it means to be in relationship with God, and you have full permission to play with them. I had a directee who came to me and said, you know, I don't even know where God is anymore. I don't even know. What am I doing here? By the way, he was a lead minister. It was a little bit dangerous place for him to come and say this to. But he needed somebody to talk to about it. So here we go. And I said, okay, well, tell me about what's it like for you to be with God? And he said, what do you mean? So we started playing with images. And the image that landed for him, he said, it's like when I was little, like maybe 4 or 5, and my granddad was trying to teach me to fish. And he was holding the fishing rod over my hand, and I kept trying to elbow him out of the way because I was going to do it my way. Oh, man. There's some great space to work in that image. I had another sweet woman who came to meet with me, and she said, you know, the only thing I can come up with is the beach. And I was like, yes, this is my favorite one. Here we go. She said, except I'm actually the water, and God is the sand, and I don't want to have anything to do with that sand. Oh, okay. There's a ton of space in that image to work with. Psalms is full of beautiful imagery of God as mother bird, of God as mountains and rocks, of God as mighty warrior. All of those images are yours to play with. And please play. Play with the image until you can find a place that has enough room to serve as a foundation for a long period of time. Now, there's a whole other class for us to talk about when it's time for that foundational image to change. This is not that class. But yes, it happens, but we're not going to do that today. Some other time, let's visit about that, because I think it would be a good conversation. But today, I want to invite you to find that foundational image that holds you no matter what else is happening. This is where you know you come when I need to be with God. When I feel like my world is shattered all around me, I can literally, anywhere in the world, whether I'm on carpet or whether I'm on rock or whether I'm on sand, stand still and know that feeling of God pulling me in to the ocean. I can practice that no matter what I'm doing or where I'm going. And in doing so, reground myself in God's presence. So I want to invite you to find your own image to play with. It's a lot of fun. You'll know you've found it when it's really amazing and beautiful and exciting to you and just a little bit terrifying. That's the perfect spot. That's the perfect one. It will have enough room to play with for a while. And if in your first attempts, you kind of start wondering about, maybe this is, we'll play with it for a while. You don't have to stick with it forever. When you decide, I'm done with that image, great. That's why we have so many in Scripture to play with. So please use them all. It's no fun if you have a box of 120 crayons and you only use 2. That's no fun. Use them all until you find the one that's just right. And when you do, allow it to become your foundation. So the deal with this title is that for me, I hear a lot from people who are in seasons of busyness, crazier busyness than their normal life. I hear from people who are in seasons of change, where a basic rhythm of their life has suddenly shifted, and they're not sure how to fix it or what to do with it. And then people who experience themselves in total displacement. Everything they knew about what they thought life was going to be is different all of a sudden, and oftentimes not by their own choice. So, in high tides or busyness, in change or tidal waves, and in tsunamis or displacement. So here we go. What can you do? What practices can ground you in God's presence in each of those places? That's where we're going today. That's what we're going to do. So first, let's talk about in seasons of extreme busyness. In order to talk about this, we have to start at this place. This is meant to be a band-aid to hold you through a short season of life. If you live your life to the extreme that you do not have time to eat, sleep, go see a doctor, or talk to your friends, stop it. Just stop. It's not healthy. You're not doing yourself or your family or your friends any good. If there is not time in your life to honor the Sabbath, if there is not time in your life to sit down and eat a real meal made of actual food, stop. Don't do this anymore. You are headed to dangerous places. But sometimes there are seasons that come that we have to move that fast for a period of time. Every year about this time, precious youth ministers start calling me and they say, how am I going to live through another summer? Okay. Let's talk about that. How are you going to live through another summer? What are some really simple ways to keep you grounded in relationship with God while your life is going 90 to nothing for 3 straight months? Here's the first thing. Carve out intentional time at the beginning and the end of every day to be with God. Now, let's start right here, right now. You don't need any special tools to do that. You do not have to have the one place in your house that's the only place you can pray. If you have that, use it when you're there. But if you're a youth minister and you're sleeping on a cot in a youth building somewhere across the country, you don't have your special chair, you can still be with God. God came. It's okay. And you do not need an hour of total silence in the room full of teenagers in order to ground yourself in God's presence. As you wake up, recite the Lord's Prayer. Practice that breathing exercise we did together for 2 to 3 minutes. Just welcome God's presence into the day. 2 minutes. That's all it takes. Now, if you're the kind of person that if you continue to lay there in bed, you'll fall back asleep, you can sit up. That's fine. Full permission. Sometimes you can even do this in the shower because you got to keep moving. I understand. But find a way that the very first conscious thought of the day is not about how am I going to get it all done, but is instead, yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory. Start right there. When you lay down to go to sleep at night, if you are one of the blessed few who can fall asleep in 10 seconds or less, you're going to have to adapt this practice a little bit, okay? I'm not one of those people. So I don't know how that works for you. You know, you have permission. Play with it. Lots of play. I like to play. If you fall asleep slowly, this is a way to fall asleep. Do that deep breathing, just like we did before. Welcome the presence of God with you. And then, just like you were looking through an old picture album, do you remember those? Like they were actual printed pictures and we slipped them in and we flipped pages? Imagine that you are looking at your day that way. Start from the beginning and go through to the end and just look through the day. Ask God to be present with you as you just notice the day. And in any of those moments, whichever one stands out the most, your only job is to say, God, is there something you wanted me to know about that? That's it. Is there something you wanted me to know? When you are waking up in the presence of God and you are falling asleep in the presence of God, you have purposefully chosen to bookend your day in God's presence and in full surrender. As you do so, you begin to fine-tune your vision throughout the day to notice that God is showing up in the middle of your insanity. And you just got to tune in to the right frequency to be able to begin to notice. And that's what those bookends are going to do. The second practice, so we're going to bookend our day, practice one. Practice two is this. You have to take care of your physical body. You have to do it. You have to sleep. You have to drink water. You have to eat food that's made out of actual food. And you have to move your body. Now, if this is hard for you, and I'm one of those people it's hard for, left to my own devices, I would live on brownies, Diet Dr. Pepper. That might be it. And coffee. Coffee. Always coffee. It's hard for me. This is a spiritual act of worship. Romans 12 promises us we're going to transform our minds by offering our bodies as living sacrifices. When you are in a season of constant going, if you're not caring for your body will stop. And then what good are you going to do? You got nothing left. So, when you're standing in line at McDonald's and there's a line of teenagers behind you, if you're one of these youth ministers that are crazy in the summer, and you have the choice, am I going to eat the quarter pounder with cheese or am I going to eat the salad? It's a spiritual act of worship to choose some real food at least one meal a day. Real food, real water, real movement as an act of worship. And in every bite, as you're gagging that salad down, if you really hate it, God, I love you. God, I mean, what you have to do, take care of your body so that it can do what you're asking. All right, so the second season we're going to talk about just a little bit is in seasons of change. You know, I really like predictable routine. It's kind of my thing. So this year, our oldest went to high school, and in our school district, high schools begin at 7:30 in the morning. I have a lot of strong feelings about that time of day, and none of them are kind. And so our whole world, like, suddenly turned upside down because she leaves for school at 6:30 in the morning. So we breakfast with her at 6 every day. So I have to be ready to go to work at 6 o'clock every day, and it just keeps going from there. It doesn't stop. This is not my favorite rhythm. And we're about 3 weeks into school, and I am bleary-eyed at the table with my precious 14-year-old. And she says, Mom, think about it. From now until the time all the kids are out of the house, you'll get to do this every day. That is not kind of you. That is not kind. So this is a new rhythm. I'm going to have to learn how to live in this season of change. I'm going to have to learn how to embrace this and make it happen. That kind of stuff happens to us all the time, right? Suddenly the commute changes for our job, or there's a new child in the house, or we've launched children from our home, or whatever. And the rhythms that predictably moved us from point A in the day to point B have been different. Now, some of you have been blessed with a personality that you think that is a fabulous adventure. I'm so excited for you. Thank you. You can take a little nap during this part. This probably won't be a big deal to you. But if you're someone that really likes the rhythm and routine, okay, let's talk about it. How can we learn to manage that space without feeling like I am losing my mind and all sense of connection to humanity? Because that's where I go. First, you have got to practice some silence. I intentionally use the word practice with silence because it is a discipline that builds in us. No one is good at silence when they start. Nobody. We all get these pictures in our minds of monks that sit cross-legged for 45 minutes at a time and bugs are flying around and they never move. And you think, if I try to sit on the floor for 10 minutes, I can't move. And I think about 400 things besides God in that time. Yes, you do. And you're so very normal. In fact, you're so normal that Henry Nouwen had a favorite phrase that I have adopted because it makes people giggle. And he says, all of us, when we try to sit down in silence, are like monkeys on a banana tree. Our brains just jump from here to there and here to there, and we have no idea what we're doing. Yeah, that's extremely normal. So take a deep breath. You're fine. You still love God. You are still seeking relationship with God. But you need some tools to learn how to practice with silence. So a couple of things. First of all, you've got to lower your expectations of yourself. If you sit down and expect to be able to be solely focused on God in pure contemplative silence for 25 minutes the first time, you're never coming back. You're never coming back. So don't do that. 5 minutes is great. Could you decide for 5 minutes every day out of a month that you're going to carve out space to be silent? That is all you need, 5 minutes, okay? That's what we start with. Turn off your phone, except for turning on a timer. do not think, because this is one of the traps, I'll just keep an eye on the time. Well, yes, you will. You'll keep an eye on the time the whole time beautifully. And the time will just keep moving on as slowly as ever. So instead, set a timer and then set your phone away from you. Be somewhere, anywhere, where you can't be bothered. You know what I like to do? Because I'm a planner. I get somewhere 5 minutes early and I lock the doors in the car and I stay there. Because there we are. Or I live in Dallas, Texas. If I'm stuck on 635, well, we might as well pray, because what else are we going to do? We could be here a while. Practice. The second thing I want you to know to do is you need something to do with your fingers. If your monkey brain is overactive, you need something to do with your hands. I broke my favorite prayer bracelet in January, and I'm still missing it desperately because I would literally hold the beads, and with every bead, I'd just rub it and pray. And then I'd move to the next one, which had kind of a different texture. And so then my mind would naturally move to something else to be praying about. Having something to do with my fingers kept the monkey part quiet. I don't know why it works. I guess it's like the little fidget things kids are playing with now, but it works. If prayer beads aren't your thing, you don't have to have prayer beads. I also have in my purse a little charm that's about this big of a cross. I just trace the pattern of the cross as I'm praying. That's all you need to do. But something with your fingers will help you focus. For 5 minutes a day, could you turn your attention to nothing but God's presence? And when your brain bounces around to 400 other places and you're rubbing on that cross thinking this lady was crazy, this doesn't work, okay. The third thing is this. Whatever your image of God is, whatever that place is that you can go, that foundation that we talked about, go to that place. And just be there with God. That's it. So for me, I get to go and imagine that I'm at the ocean all the time. It's the best. Because God is there drawing me in. That's all you have to do. That's the only thing required to practice silence. So here's the second practice for those seasons of change, those seasons where you feel like your rhythm is off. Find a story that you can play in a little bit. What I mean by that is the biblical narrative is full of these amazing stories of people, some of them kind of dumb, that do really stupid things that I relate to a lot, that we're trying to be in relationship with God. So find one and play with it for a while. For instance, if suddenly you realize we're going to have to move, well, maybe it's time to be with Moses as he tries to lead the Israelites through the desert. Because I don't know about you, but that's what a road trip feels like with my family. We're trying to find our way through the desert, and all these people, all they want to do is eat all the time. Okay, I can be with Moses in that space. What does God want to say? In this season of our ministry that is about 6 years old, I find myself frequently going to imagine what must it have been like for Mary when Jesus was about six and he was old enough to be really smart and she knows that there's something special, but he's still a kid and he probably still climbed trees and scraped his knee. And I'm pretty sure he pinched his siblings occasionally. And all she can think is, I can't keep up with all this stuff. Yeah, me too, Mary. Me too. Find a story that feels like yours. Someone who is living the same kind of adventure with God that you are right now, and enter into it and see what happens. Go to the story and read it, you know, once a week or so for a couple of months and see what God does with it. Play with it. If you are a fabulous artist, first, let's talk, because I need some fabulous artists in my life. I have some things I want you to do. But also, like, draw about it. Color it. Take pictures. Whatever works for you, be in the story. There was this fantastic trend in children's ministry to invite kids to come and play in the story, godly play. And if the story took place in the desert, well, then we're going to play in a sandbox. And if the story took place in the water, then we're going to play in the water. You can do that too. And it's really fun. It's really, really fun. Invite God to just be with you as you're with the story. What does God have for you in that place? What can you learn? So this last season, this season of a tsunami or displacement, You know, life's full of some curveballs. And I'm not always ready to adapt very well when they show up. I think one of the biggest curveballs we were ever thrown was in the birth of our oldest daughter, who was born with special needs. And we found out just a few weeks before she was born that what was, we thought had been a very normal pregnancy, suddenly there was this different outcome on the way. What do you do? Everything we thought we were anticipating changes just like that. So then what? How do you pursue God in those places? Or what about the ministers that call me and they had no idea that their elders had had them on probation for 6 months and suddenly they don't have a job and they didn't know it was coming? What do you do? Nothing in you was prepared for this place. And you start to think, God, what have you done to me? Where are you? That's a fair question. And you're not the first one to ask it. And God has never smited someone who asked it from an honest heart. Never. If you find that story that he did, I want to talk about it with you, okay? Because I've never seen that. So what do you do when nothing is going to be the way that you thought it was going to be from this point forward? First, I want you to ground yourself every single day for at least 6 months in two passages of Scripture, in Matthew 3:17 and in Psalm 4. And those are the only two scriptures I want you to read for 6 months. The only two. And when some other well-meaning minister person asks you if you're doing your daily Bible reading, just say yes. Okay? Just like this. Yes, I am, in fact. Matthew 3:17 and Psalm 4. But I don't just want you to read those. I want you to be in the story. I want you to step into those baptismal waters, and I want you to hear God's voice and feel the light and feel the dove land on your shoulder. I want you to receive the blessing of Beloved and hold on to it every day for 6 months. And every night I want you to go to Psalm 4 and be David as he is begging God's protection. Yes, you get to do that too. Those are the only two scriptures you need to be in for those 6 months. You have a lifetime to read the rest. It'll be okay. It will be okay. When you think, oh, yeah, I've got everything I need to know from these two passages that you've been with for 6 months, that means it's time to start the second 6 months. Yeah, I'm serious. You can add other things into your diet then, but those are your grounding forces. Matthew 3:17 and Psalm 4. The second practice for this particular season of life is so important. And when I tell you about it, I'm going to guess, have this sense of, oh man, people have told me that before. I know. Give me a minute. We can do it in a way that's life-giving, I promise. Okay? So hang on. But I want you to practice examine. Two things to tell you as we begin talking about examine. Number one, it is grounded in you are loved. That's why we started with Matthew 3:17 in this season. You are loved. You are not practicing examine. You're not examining yourself in order to see what you did wrong. You are looking for where God showed up. Okay? The second thing to tell you is that if the only voices you are hearing are negative, derogatory, painful voices, those are not God. And you may tell them to stop. You've been given that power. Use it. Every day, as you fall asleep at night, this is how I like to practice examine anyway. As I fall asleep at night, I am asking myself the question, God, where did you show up today? Sometimes it's in a person. Sometimes it's in whales. Sometimes it's in a really good nap. God, where did you show up today? And I'm going to savor that moment. Kind of like the way that if you were going to eat a single M&M and you just let it melt in your mouth and you never chew, that's what you're going to do with that moment. You just hold on to it. When you get up in the morning, or if you practice this all at one time, which is fine too, record it somehow. There are a million different ways to do this, and some of them can be very creative and fun if that's your personality. The real simple way is just write it down. It's real easy. But, you know, me, I really like pretty journals. If it's pretty, I'm likely to pick it up. And if it has colored pens with it, I'm double likely to pick it up. If that works for you, do it. I had another directee who, in a season of displacement, said, I'm going to take a single picture every day, and I'm going to write in the caption, this is what it means to me that God was here. She made it a private Instagram account. At the end of the year, she printed it into a coffee table book with the captions, and it sits in her living room. When people come into her home, they say, what's that? And she says, let me show you. This is where God showed up last year. An incredible testament to who she is with God. And, oh yeah, God was there. I wasn't lost. God was with me. And now I have recorded it, and I will keep it, and I will share this story. Now, I am a terrible photographer, so that does not work for me. However, my spiritual director is a very kind, gracious woman who pretends like I am decent at art, which I'm grateful for because that's part of like the loving and welcoming me thing, right? And so she will encourage me when there's an image that's really strong and I want to remember it, but I'm a terrible artist. She says, draw it anyway. Or go online and print out a million pictures of it and make a collage out of them until it resembles what's happening in you. And something about that process is healing. It's healing. So I told you that possibly the strongest grounding image of my life with God for the last 10 years has been this idea that God is the ocean pulling me in. And I'm a person that I am wanting to pursue relationship with God. So I tell my husband that we have to go to the beach at least once a year because I have to go be with God. He works beautifully. He's here. That's why I can say that. He's grinning back there. And one of the things that I also do in pursuing relationship with God is I ask God every year about December, I start looking back at where God and I have been, and I say, God, is there a word that's going to guide us forward over this next year? What's the word going to be? 3 years ago, I did this, and there was no word. I had been sitting asking God for almost a month, and here it is. It's like January the 3rd. I still don't have a word. I don't have anything. And I'm thinking, so God, are we just like aimless this year? Is that the word? Like, is it nothingness? What's the word? And I keep getting this picture in my mind of a turtle. A turtle. And it finally started dawning on me, maybe this has something to do with my prayer, that I've been asking God to show me who we're going to be. And I'm like, God, I don't know what to do with a turtle. I don't want to be a turtle. What's the deal with turtle? But it would not go away. Okay. Yes, God, turtle. There are turtles in the ocean. We can work with that, right? There's some room to play. So I did. I started wondering about turtles. My spiritual director said, print off every picture you can find of every kind of turtle until you find the one. That's the one in your vision. Well, I did. Vision, okay, whatever. Nancy, that's really sweet of you. So I did. I have this picture of a turtle, and it is a tiny baby loggerhead climbing out of a nest. It's really cute. And I was like, turtle, I don't have a clue. I don't know. But, hey, we're going to go on a family vacation this year, and it's the year we're going to travel with all of my family. And I have an aunt and uncle that live on the East Coast, and they always want us to come. So what if we all went to Myrtle Beach together? Because it's a beach, and we'll be a family. And there happen to be turtles that lay their eggs all up and down the East Coast in the summer. So we did. I convinced my entire family to wait until August to go on vacation so that we could maybe find a turtle nest. That sounded like a good idea. And lo and behold, we did. And we're standing out, that's our next to last night there, and we're taking family pictures, which is an ordeal. There are five grandchildren who are misbehaving, and we are trying desperately to get a picture because the sunset's gorgeous behind us in the water. You know those moments, right? No one is feeling very kind in that moment. And I, out of the corner of my eye over here, I can see all this movement around this nest that we had seen earlier in the day when we had been there. There are all these people like buzzing around and poking at it and digging. And I was like, whatever, I'm done with family pictures for a minute. I'm going over here. I'm going to take a time out because I'm kind of tired of you people. So here I go. And I go on this little trek over there to see what in the world is happening. And these volunteers tell me we think this nest is going to hatch tonight. How do you know this nest is going to hatch tonight? She said, well, you know, look here. And she's showing me all the signs to look for. I said, well, what do you do? And she says, we just sit and we wait. Come back after sunset. Won't be till then. But you can come wait with us if you want to. Yes, we drove halfway across the country. I'm coming. I got my whole family to do this with me. There are 13 people just from our family. We are waiting in expectation for these turtles. And God decided to show off. Because here we are. The nest is right here. This way is the beach behind us right here. And there's a meteor shower that's going on. And over here, out over the ocean, is a lightning storm. And we're just all sitting there together, my entire family, waiting for these turtles. And all of a sudden, three nests hatch all at the same time. And 72 baby turtles start crawling over our toes into the ocean. And we're all standing there with our mouths hanging open that God allowed us this moment. Just this one moment. When there was no question. Yes, God. You are here. You are present. And you are all loving. And this gift. We're so grateful for this moment. So, I wear a lot of turtles to remember to say yes. Whatever season, whether you feel like the tides are crazy and unpredictable, or you feel like it's a full-on tsunami, whatever the season, my prayer is that you will say yes. And who knows what precious gift God has in store for you. Thank you for choosing to be here. I have two things to tell you before I pray over you. One is, if you want my printed version of these notes, you're welcome to them. They're over here on this desk. Please take one. And there's information there to contact 1128, and I would love to hear from you. And the second is to tell you, if you need someone to walk with you through one of these seasons, this is what I do. Please call, email, text, Skype, Facebook message, whatever medium works for you. This is what our ministry does, and we want to be helpful. So please let us walk alongside of you. So if you will, God of ocean waves, baby turtles, meteor showers, lightning storms, God of love, abide with us. Go with us from this place. Draw us ever deeper into life with you. Amen. Thank you for being here.